Hello again and welcome back. Well, just back from the Winter Games and Sochi, Russia's Casey Nolan, who covered the games for KSDK Channel 5. He joins us in studio to talk about this experience. Casey, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, John.
This is one of your first official events since returning. You're just back, aren't you?
Yeah, my first official event was to sleep all night, and then this is my second.
How is the jet lag treating you?
Fine, I think, because, you know, the hours, no complaining, just to be clear, but the hours are adventurous, to say the least. Like the last full day I worked, I slept 1 hour that night, so I was prepped for jet lag.
And you came back without pink eye. Congratulations.
Stayed away from Bob Costas.
Didn't you think that that was going to be one of the biggest stories of the Olympic Games?
Oh, for sure. And for a lot of people for a time, it was. Bob's great to KSDK. He came in and did some interviews with Mike Bush beforehand. You know, he has a lot of ties, obviously, to St. Louis, and he's always made time for us. So I put a call in to see if I could talk to Bob, and, well, I wasn't the only one with that idea. You know, everybody brother. So they did a huge conference call with L.A. Times and New York Times and everybody. But, yeah, that was bad stuff.
What is your most vivid memory of the games?
Oh, my. Wow. You know, it's one that was hard to translate to a traditional report, and that was when I stumbled into one particular part of the park that I kind of missed for the first couple of days. And, you know, forgive me if it sounds corny, but I really felt what maybe people would call that Olympic spirit, where you hear multiple different languages that you can't understand, but you see a lot of smiles, people coming up just wanting to wave. You know, I grew up during the Rocky IV era when Russia were the bad guys, right? You know, but that's not the case. And they were just excited to see an American. You know, you're warned. Don't put too many American flags on your shirt or you know, don't flaunt your U.S. Citizenship too much. And these are dangerous times. If anybody found out you were American, in my experience, they just wanted to shake your hand and say hi. So that was one of, and also that same part of the park that I found had some amazing architectural elements too, that I just felt like they pulled off a really beautiful park. You know, it was kind of different in the history of winter venues where they had a park. You know, normally it's spread out over Salt Lake City at different resorts or Vancouver or whatever, but this was a traditional park, kind of like a Summer Olympics, only on a smaller scale. And this one particular part of the park I'm talking about, they just had these, you know, very large architectural features that were just large walls saying welcome. And then you could see the flame in the background, and you could see some traditional music on display and things like that. And then just people pouring over the bridge into the park and just having a great time.
You know, a lot of people here, I think, were under the impression of before and to some extent during taking shots at the Russians, saying everything was kind of shoddy. I mean, they were blaming the Russians on the weather. Mm-hmm. I gather from what you're saying that you had a totally different impression about your hosts.
Well, on a personal level, yes. I discovered a lot of pride amongst, you know, different classes of people. Obviously, the people putting it on, you know, they give the official statements, but also people who, you know, those that we could communicate, either they could speak a little English or we did have a translator in our group. There was a great sense of pride of what they had pulled off as a country. Now, having said that, yeah, my experience was great. My hotel room was fine. But certainly, things are done differently when it comes to just building things than they are in this country. You know, little things like, wow, maybe we shouldn't put this indoor tile outdoors because the day it rained, everybody was slipping and falling. You know, I'm pretty sure I was the first person to stay in my hotel room. And by the time I left, the door was already broken. You know, so there are different things are done a little differently. You know, I think there was one estimate I saw in a national report that close to 25% of that $50+ billion went to graft. You know, things are different. But in terms of the main facilities were spectacular, the arenas. And then in terms of the pride of the people and their welcoming nature of the people, those you couldn't have asked for anything better.
It's almost like the media here were looking for things that went wrong or could go wrong.
You know, if I showed up and I didn't have the floor of my hotel wasn't in good shape or something like that, I might have had a different perspective. But certainly when you get a bunch of journalists who are addicted to Twitter, myself included, into a venue 4 days early with no people and no competition, I think definitely the overall of the press, we were guilty of latching on to a smaller story.
You went there at a time of some concern over security, justified concern from what we were reading here. How did you experience that? What were your thoughts about that as you were on scene?
in a smaller capacity, because I wasn't the only one going for Channel 5 in 2012 to London. But I did go to London, and so with that perspective, I felt like inside the park would be safe, and I think I was right. However, security is done differently than it was in London. I feel like that may be a cultural difference too. I don't know. Things were very orderly and buttoned up and regimented in London. And here in Russia, it was I felt safe, but it was different. The one example I can kind of give that brought it home to me was every day you go through the kind of the equivalent of an airport security line to get into the park, although you don't take your shoes off, you don't take your belt off. There was a woman in front of me. I presume she was Russian because it sounded like the argument she was having over her bottled water was in Russian. And she was adamant that she needed to take these two bottles of water in, and they put in a letter, and she threw them in the trash can and stormed off. I had a bottle of water in my hand. They didn't say a word, let me right through, and told me to have a nice day.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not as, you know, maybe she fits some sort of profile that they were looking for. I have no idea.
What were conditions like for the reporter, for you? That's a big venue, and there's a lot going on all of the time. How do you manage to keep track and cover the things you're supposed to cover?
With a lot of help from back home. And, you know, I did travel by myself, but it took, as you know, it takes a huge team to pull something like that off. And there were people back here helping me kind of stay on top of the schedule. Because, you know, you strike out. A lot of your day is spent getting from one venue to another or trying to meet with your local athlete or local person. Mm-hmm. And with the security and with the distance to walk, it can be time-consuming. So, you know, I could get back from a shoot and something big would have happened somewhere else that I wouldn't have any way of knowing about if somebody didn't help me keep track of that.
It's an interesting feeling to be right in the middle of something big and be expected to know everything that's going on, but that's an impossibility.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing sometimes when you get the phone. You know, we had little check-ins, and I would call back to St. Louis, and they would say, "So, have you got anything on David Backus adopting a dog from Sochi?" And I'm like, "Slow down a second. I just talked to David Backus yesterday, and I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. That had happened since then." You know, so that can be a challenge.
What was the most difficult part of it for you? The most challenging?
Well, again, you know, it's like baseball, no crying at the Olympics, but it can be a challenge to run on that many consecutive days of 3 hours of sleep, you know, mm-hmm. just to try to maintain a positive attitude. So it's always good. You check in with the people back home and they give you an encouraging word and you march on. But the hours, again, not complaining, just to be clear, but it was
sure
physically challenging.
I understand. We have some time, and I'll open up the phone lines. If folks would like to get into the conversation with Casey Nolan of KSDK Channel 5, just back from the Sochi Olympics, come on in. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. What were your impression of the athletes? I mean, we see these people, perform. And there are a lot of feature stories done about them. What was your impression of them overall?
They are both different than us and just like us. Mm-hmm. Every single one, the high profile all the way down to the person you've never heard of, in my experience, when you get to know them a little bit, they have overcome something that is inspiring. And again, this may sound a little corny, but it truly is inspiring when you hear about the sacrifices they've put in. And they've just, they've had people help them along the way. They've had, they've put in a lot of hard work. Now, obviously, they are, for the most part, they have a different genetic makeup than the rest of us.
Here, here.
But, you know, I one of the guys that we spent a fair amount of time with and I got to know was a guy that we were pretty proud of who's a St. Louis University high grad, Patrick Meek. He's mm-hmm. a speed skater that didn't win any medals. But he definitely went a long way to boost the morale of a speed skating team, a U.S. speed skating team that had very little success in Russia. And the way he describes himself is he doesn't have any superior genetics. He's just outworked people to get there. And I tell you what, that is impressive because, especially, you know, while a sport like speed skating will make you a rock star in the Netherlands, you toil in anonymity for the most of the time here in the States. And he just They overcome. It's amazing.
It's almost like curling.
Exactly.
You know, I saw the piece. I remember the piece that you did with him, and it was very clear, his sense of commitment. There was an expression that he had that I thought was most interesting. It was all in his face and in his expression. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that occurs to me, Casey, and bear me out on this, or perhaps I'm wrong, and that is, I find that the athletes, there's a lot of disappointment. There's more disappointment than there is, you know, victory. I feel they conceal their disappointment very well after the event. Do you feel that at all?
Absolutely, because, you know, they think about how competitive they must have to be to put in this work and to the sacrifice and to get to where they are. I'm thinking of a girl we claimed as our hometown girl because she spent a little time in St. Louis, but also grew up in Springfield, Missouri, and Springfield, Illinois. So I'm talking about this, the figure skater, Gracie Gold. So the competitive nature that it takes to go out there and perform on your own and to try to make zero mistakes at the highest level of your sport, when you walk away with one bronze medal and a fourth place finish, yeah, I think she was disappointed. However, you know, you think about a bronze medal, what's the percentage of athletes that were at the Olympics who will be able to walk away with a medal? It's very small. So.
I saw that interview, and aside from the fact that she looked adorable and gorgeous when she talked about winning the bronze, I mean, that was obviously very much a big deal to her.
Oh, yeah. She was very happy to have a medal, and that is a big deal, to say the least.
I would like to encourage callers to come on in once again in the time that we have left with Casey Nolan of Channel 5. 382-8255 is the number. What about the parents? I'm sure you ran into a lot of parents of the young athletes and local folks as well. What about them? What impressions do you have?
You know, it's kind of like the athletes themselves. They are regular human beings who have found in them a new level at which to operate, at which to do their particular sport, or at which to parent. You know, there's a commitment level there. You know, for instance, Gracie's parents. You know, here she is doing Visa commercials nationwide now. She's a household name for a lot of folks. And her parents are just regular folks call Springfield, Missouri home, or Springfield, Illinois home, you know, that have found a way to perform at a higher level as a parent, I guess you could say, in terms of their commitment and their sacrifice for her.
I was just going to say that that's precisely what it's all about for them. The things that they go through are as challenging in many ways as the situation for the athletes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about how many parents put in all of that time and their young athlete never makes it to that level.
Yeah. What about the dogs? A lot of attention over here to the dogs.
You know, I'll say this. First of all, it cracked me up when I heard the official Russian press conference where they said there are no more dogs in Olympic Park. And there were clearly dogs in everywhere you went. Mm-hmm. However, I can tell you the perspective of – so just to be clear, I was sitting at a group of about 15 to 18 people from the company that Channel 5 is a part of. And the gentleman who's been to several Olympics in years past said in his mind this was no different than any Olympics he could remember, especially when you talk about Athens. You know, maybe not Atlanta, but several other Olympics have had dogs. Again, maybe they didn't have Twitter to get their message out. Nevertheless, there were a fair amount of dogs there. It was kind of, you know, it's at one point it was a little sad to see, but, you know, they were friendly pups. they definitely had the run of the place.
They generally are. The weather, another big issue here. You obviously were aware that these were conditions not necessarily conducive to the sports that were being played.
Yeah, it was. I felt a little guilty standing in a live shot in you know, no sleeves and a vest when it was 6 degrees back in St. Louis. But it was beautiful. You know. This is historically a resort town going back, you know, several decades in Russia's history where the Soviet leaders like to come and get a little rest on the beach. Now they'd like to make it a winter resort town, and as we have already said, they've put billions of dollars towards that effort. But in the mountains, too, it got warm. It flirted with 60 degrees even. So they had enough snow, but it wasn't always in the best of conditions. made for a great spring break for me, but it wasn't the best snow. You know, of course, and you think, well, every athlete has to deal with the same conditions, but those conditions can change. And if you take it, as it was being explained to me, depending on where the shade falls, and depending on, you know, a slightly different route one skier may take down a course than another, it can actually have a huge impact on the outcome of an event.
What were the athletes saying about it?
Well, just that. They were not super excited about it. Of course, again, you talk about the psyche of these athletes, and none that I heard were going to make an excuse for it or use it as an excuse for any kind of a poor performance. But I think certainly they weren't happy with the conditions in terms of, you know, they weren't ideal. In fact, the snowboard folks even complained that they got some things changed, got some of the courses reworked because they thought they were a little unsafe.
Yeah, the hockey team was a great disappointment. And we talked a moment ago about how well that can be concealed. Was it as concealed as well by the hockey players as perhaps the skaters and some of the others?
I don't think so. Our guys were upset. I commend the St. Louis Blues David Backes for stepping up. He's a class act always. That night that they lost to Canada, he was the only St. Louis Blue. It's an interesting setup where you're at the game, and then right after the competition, a certain number of athletes filter through what they call the mixed zone, where you just have dozens of cameras up against a rail waiting for individual players to stop and come by. And he was the only St. Louis Blue for the U.S. that came through that line. And he was the only one of the very few U.S. players who would stop at all. They were not happy. They took this very seriously. And we were grateful for him to, you know, stop and talk to us. But, yeah, you could tell they were very disappointed.
What happened? I mean, they got off to such a great start.
You know, I think in baseball terms, I think what you saw in that Canada game was a pitching duel. And with one, as they described it, just kind of one lucky shot that Canada got in. So if you like defense, if you like good goaltending, it was a great game. It just so happened the U.S. came out on the wrong end of that. And then I think clearly they were deflated in that bronze medal game.
Sure.
Just couldn't come back.
What was a typical day like for you?
So I stayed in a hotel that was about a 10 to 20-minute bus ride, depending on which route they took. Again, maybe a cultural difference. Sometimes we drove through a parking lot, and I didn't know why, to get to the stadium. But so it was a different route every day. So I would wake up and make it to the – so about, I would say, 70% of the live shots I did were staffed by NBC cameras. I also had a little backpack that I could put up a live shot by myself when I went to the mountains and other places. Through cell signals, but I would try to make it to that NBC camera by 8:30 local time there in Sochi for the 10 o'clock news here in St. Louis, which was coming on at 10:30.
What was the time difference?
10 hours.
10 hours.
10 hours. So, and then from there, I would have a quick breakfast and start my day when you guys were going to sleep here. I would then get on the phone in a few hours to the Today in St. Louis morning show crew, figure out what we wanted to cover for them. Typically, that 10 o'clock show, we were doing more of a local angle that you couldn't get from Bob Costas or the NBC crew. And then for the Today in St. Louis morning show, we were doing more of the what was coming up that day, what maybe I knew having been there for the day that you were about to see. And then around at 4 and 4:30 in the afternoon, I would do the morning show live shots back here in St. Louis. And then that evening was when some events would start wrapping up, and I would need to be at different press conferences, which would go on into the evening. And then another one of my responsibilities, we're also part of the same company that owns USA Today. So I would help out with some USATODAY.com stuff, whether I would shoot a daily wrap that I would present, or I would shoot some interviews with Christine Brennan, their longtime Olympic columnist, or other people covering different beats. And that would, depending on, like if Christine Brennan was covering skating, that would be around 1:30 in the morning. And then I would start it all over again the next day.
It doesn't sound like spring break to me, Casey. It sounds like a lot of hard work. Only a few seconds left. Were there any significant technical glitches?
No, it went surprisingly smoothly, considering we were thousands of miles away.
Boy, it's an amazing world we live in today.
It
with
really
the ability
is.
To do that with satellite and digital world and all the rest of it.
It absolutely is.
Well, Casey Nolan, Channel 5, welcome back. Nice
Thank
job.
You.
I saw most of your stuff, if not all of it, and you did a great job.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate
it's good,
it.
It's good to have you back. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the issue of sex trafficking and efforts to prevent it. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Let's listen to the Olympic theme as we go out. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.